This submission, A Geometry of Coherence, proposes a unified mathematical framework to detect early system failure across clinical, ecological, and economic domains. The ambition is exceptional. So let's dive right into tightening the bridge between abstract geometry and practical users to maximize impact.
The abrupt escalation from accessible systems theory to highly abstract mathematical concepts risks alienating the very practitioners the manuscript aims to empower. I mean, if we look at the progression, chapter 2 is just, it's really brilliant.
Oh yeah, completely.
It beautifully explains the hidden role of relationships in complex systems. It sets up this this very intuitive, welcoming foundation for the reader.
But then the moment we cross into chapter 3, the floor just falls out.
Right. The text just accelerates aggressively into complex numbers, then quaternions in chapter 4 and like octonions in chapter 5.
Yeah, and the text explicitly claims to be a practical language for clinicians, environmentalists, and policymakers. But, you know, put yourself in the shoes of a hospital administrator managing an ICU.
Or a coastal ecologist monitoring a reef.
Exactly. They're reading this to solve immediate, high-stakes problems. When they're suddenly hit with non-associative division algebras,
they're gonna struggle.
They're gonna seriously struggle to see how that directly helps them detect system instability in their daily work. The mathematical necessity overshadows the practical utility way too early.
Yeah, the weakness is that the reader just loses sight of the why. They completely forget why they're learning about algebraic nesting, because the physical stakes of the real world have just vanished from the page. We are suddenly just talking about variables and geometric spaces in a vacuum.
Right, so the suggestion here is to restructure the mathematical introductions to serve strictly as structural metaphors rather than sequential geometric proofs.
Uh-huh.
You've got to anchor each mathematical leap to a persistent, evolving real-world case study.
Like introducing a single, continuous narrative case study right at the beginning of chapter 3.
Exactly. Say, a specific ICU patient developing sepsis. Or, you know, if we prefer the ecological route, a specific coastal reef facing a marine heat wave.
Yeah, you introduce this high-stakes scenario, and then you map the mathematical concepts directly onto this narrative in real time as the chapters progress.
So, for instance, when introducing quaternions in Chapter 4, where order matters...
Which is what mathematicians call non-commutativity, right?
Right. In normal arithmetic, 2 times 3 is the same as 3 times 2. Order doesn't matter. But in a complex biological system, order is everything.
So instead of just talking about three-dimensional mathematical rotations abstractly, the author should show exactly how administering intravenous fluids before vasopressors in our ICU case study changes the mathematical state of the system toward viability.
Right. It's like a three-dimensional combination lock. If you turn the dial left, then right, it clicks open. If you turn it right, then left, it stays jammed.
Yeah, you would contrast the successful intervention by showing how applying vasopressors first, like the reverse order, triggers a geometric failure state.
Because the patient's vascular system doesn't have the fluid volume to support the artificial pressure. Suddenly, the non-commutative nature of the quaternion isn't just an abstract algebra concept.
No, it becomes a literal matter of life and death on the page.
Exactly. Alternatively, the authors could use visual side-by-side matrices throughout these chapters, comparing the abstract math concept with a concrete real-world outcome. Make it clear that these are just a few out of all possible ways of solving this problem. The goal is simply to ensure the math never floats away from the physical world.
Yeah, that visual anchoring would be huge.
I can see what you're going for here. Let's see how we can strengthen this. Is there a risk that simplifying the math to a metaphor might dilute the formal mathematical rigor the authors are trying to establish?
That's fascinating. What are the potential limitations or counterarguments to that idea? Building on that point, what if we looked at it from the perspective of the user's daily workflow?
Right, because for the user, application is everything.
Exactly. I would argue that rigor isn't lost if the application is clear. In fact, applied rigor is much harder to achieve than theoretical rigor. By grounding the algebra in physical reality, you maintain the mathematical rigor while ensuring the practitioner never, ever loses the thread of utility.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So moving on to our next area, the foundational pillars of the framework. the seven primitives and seven triadic channels, are introduced early on but are left disconnected from the core narrative for too long.
This is a direct consequence of that deep dive into abstract algebra we were just discussing.
Right, because the reader gets pulled so deep into the mathematical weeds, they completely lose the practical framework they were promised at the beginning of the book.
Yeah, the weakness is so apparent here. In the executive summary, the text explicitly promises a highly usable framework built on seven primitives.
And it's a great list, right? Constraints, margins, state, disturbances, perception, regulation, and options.
It's a brilliant, highly intuitive list. Any systems manager instantly recognizes those terms. But then the text takes the reader on a massive 15-chapter detour.
Oh yeah, a detour through the Fano plane.
The exceptional Lie groups like G2 and F4, the Freidenthal magic square.
And E8 symmetry. All before fully functionalizing these specific primitives in chapters 18 and 19.
Hey, right. It isn't until the very end that these things are finally turned into a grammar.
So a key theme running through this material seems to be architecture. It feels like we're being shown the bricks in the executive summary, but then we go on a massive detour about the physics of clay before we actually see the house being built.
That is such a good analogy. It creates an enormous cognitive gap. Human working memory is limited, you know?
Yeah. The reader is essentially forced to hold these seven abstract primitives in their head for over 100 pages without a structural place to put them.
Exactly. I mean, I was taking notes, and by the time we hit the Freudenthal magic square in chapter 12, I had completely forgotten what a margin was in the context of the opening framework.
So how do we fix this structural gap?
The suggestion is to integrate the seven primitives progressively as the mathematical structures are introduced.
Okay, so building it piece by piece.
Right. Use the geometry to build the practical framework chapter by chapter, rather than revealing it all in a grand finale at the very end.
Yeah, the practical framework shouldn't be the reward for surviving the math. It should be the lens through which the math is understood in the first place.
Exactly.
Give me a concrete illustration of how that progressive integration works.
Well, when the Fano plane is first introduced in chapter 6, it's described geometrically as having seven points and seven lines. The author should explicitly map the seven primitives to the points of the plane right then and there.
Oh, I see. Don't wait until chapter 18.
Right. Don't wait. Show the reader exactly how the triad of constraint, margin, and state forms one interconnected line of that geometric plane early on.
You're basically handing the reader the blueprint while you pour the foundation.
Viability check-in box.
Oh, I love the idea of a viability check-in box.
Yeah, it would serve as a translation key. It would take the newly learned mathematical rule and actively translate it back into the everyday vocabulary of the seven primitives.
Right. It gives the reader a moment to breathe and contextualize what they just spent 20 pages learning.
Yeah. So let's say chapter 8 is all about how reflection groups break mathematical symmetry.
Okay.
The check-in box at the end of the chapter would explain how a loss of options or an exhaustion of margins, two of our core primitives, breaks the operational symmetry of a hospital's resource allocation during a mass casualty event.
These are just a few possibilities for how to format it, of course. But the author absolutely needs to find a way to maintain that structural thread throughout the dense middle section.
Definitely. Which brings us to the ultimate payoff in chapter 14, if the reader makes it that far.
Right. The introduction of the E7 quartic invariant as a measure of coherence lacks the actionable diagnostic translation needed to fulfill the manuscript's core promise of detecting early warning signals.
The weakness here is that chapter 14 introduces the E7 invariant as a brilliant way to measure viability formally, distinguishing between positive, zero, and negative regions to show when a system is collapsing, but it stays largely conceptual.
Yeah, it describes it as a first glimpse of a viability functional.
Right, but if this invariant is the ultimate tool for predicting sudden system collapse, the mechanics of how a practitioner actually inputs their data into this invariant are completely missing.
Let's look closely at the section discussing the E7 invariant. The material makes a strong case for early warning by highlighting the dynamics of the invariant. But as I understand it from the notes, the argument here is that the user can do this themselves.
Is the connection between the abstract invariant and the actual data input fully established in the material, or is that an area to potentially bolster? I wonder, though, if we've considered showing the literal math with numbers rather than just variables.
Because right now, The so what is perfectly articulated, right? It's meant to save lives, prevent economic crashes, protect ecosystems. But the how to is entirely absent.
It's the difference between the smoke alarm and the thermal camera.
Oh, that's a great way to look at it.
Yeah, right now, hospital alarms go off when a patient's blood pressure drops. That's a lagging indicator. It's like the smoke alarm going off after the house is already on fire.
And the E7 invariant, as the author describes it, is supposed to be the thermal camera that sees the wires heating up inside the wall long before the spark ever catches.
Exactly. It sees the relational decay. But the author forgot to include the instruction manual for how to turn the camera on.
So to solve this weakness, the suggestion is to provide a simulated, step-by-step diagnostic translation showing exactly how conventional lagging indicators can be fed into the E7 invariant.
Right, to reveal a hidden loss of coherence before a crash actually happens. We have to take this out of the theoretical realm and drop it directly onto the desk of a working professional.
So, what would a concrete example of that instruction manual actually look like?
The author could create a hypothetical diagnostic dashboard interface as a full-page visual figure right there in chapter 14.
Okay, so we'd want to see a graph, maybe similar to the illusion of stability curve from figure 1, but actually populated with mock data.
Yes, exactly. Take standard, everyday clinical variables that every nurse and doctor knows. Blood pressure, heart rate variability, vasopressor dosage.
And then show the reader how to map those specific numbers into the constraint margin state triad.
Right. So, for instance, blood pressure is the state. Heart rate variability is the margin. The vasopressor dosage is the constraint.
Okay. I follow.
If the state, the blood pressure, looks perfectly stable on the monitor, but the margin of heart rate variability is collapsing and the constraint of the medication is maxed out, the E7 scalar drops to zero.
Exactly. You calculate that Mach E7 scalar value right on the page, and you show it dropping from a positive safe zone down to zero before the patient's actual blood pressure drops.
Seeing that predictive drop on a hypothetical dashboard is what proves the value of the entire book. It delivers that massive aha moment for the reader.
Alternatively, you could provide a supplementary appendix showing the literal algorithmic logic or pseudocode a data scientist would use.
Yeah. Because the people actually building these systems in the hospital's IT department need the raw mechanics. Show the exact tensor calculations, define the inputs mathematically, and set the output thresholds.
Exactly.
To summarize this critique, the material is mathematically profound, but can be significantly strengthened by intensely focusing on practical translation. We've identified 3 actionable steps.
First, anchor the abstract math chapters with a continuous real-world case study, like the ICU patient or the coral reef, so the practitioner never loses the context of why they are learning the algebra.
Second, progressively integrate the 7 primitives into the middle chapters using tools like viability check-in boxes rather than deferring the framework to the end. This keeps the structural payload intact and manages the cognitive load.
And third, provide a simulated step-by-step diagnostic example of the E7 invariant using real-world mock data and algorithmic logic so the reader knows exactly how to apply it in their daily workflow.
We highly encourage you to implement these structural bridges and submit your revised material back in again for more feedback.
The core of this manuscript has the potential to profoundly shift how we manage complex systems. Grounding this high-level geometry in immediate practical application will ensure it reaches and empowers the people who need it most.
Because whether you are monitoring a fragile coral reef in the ocean or a human heart in the ICU, you simply cannot wait for the sudden silence to tell you the system has failed. You have to be able to see the relational decay while there is still time to act.